On behalf of the American Friends Service Committee and all the co-sponsoring organizations tonight, I want to welcome you all. Thanks for being here. My name is Michael McConnell. I'm the Regional Director of AFSC. As you might know, it was founded in 1917. It's a Quaker organization, founded first to support conscientious objectors to World War I. We're a peace and social justice organization espousing pacifism and nonviolence. That'll be relevant in a moment as I talk a bit about AFSC's own history with the FBI. So we're here tonight because on September 24th, 2010, the FBI carried out a series of raids in Chicago and Minneapolis. Following the raids, the Justice Department subpoenaed 23 Palestinian and Colombian solidarity activists to appear before a Chicago grand jury headed by U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald. A grand jury is a secret court. It's a secret court proceeding where the jury members are not screened for bias, where a prosecutor questions witnesses without a defense attorney present, and where there is no judge and the witnesses have no right to refuse to testify. The title for tonight's event is taken from Martin Niemöller, German pastor during the Nazi era. First they came for the communists, and I didn't speak out because I wasn't a communist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I didn't speak out because I wasn't a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and they didn't speak out. I was a Protestant. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. The words, "then they came for me," are particularly relevant to Stephanie Weiner. Tonight. Stephanie teaches English in Chicago City Colleges, is a founder of AFSCME Local 3506, and is one of the activists whose house was raided, and she and her husband were subpoenaed. "They Came for Me" is also very poignant and relevant for Sarah Smith, who's a college student who participated in a delegation to Palestine and Israel, and shortly thereafter was subpoenaed by the FBI. "Then they came for the trade unionists." Very important and relevant, poignant words for Leah Fried, who's been an organizer with the United Electrical, Radio, and Machine Workers of America for 13 years. Also on the panel this evening is Rima Ahmad, Executive Director of Project Mobilize, a political action nonprofit organization dedicated to the advancement of politically marginalized communities at the local, national, and state levels. I'll wait for a minute to introduce Michael Deutsch. But the words, "and I didn't speak out," are relevant for the rest of us here tonight. By the end of the event tonight, I hope that those words will not be followed by any of us. We will not only learn tonight better the role of the FBI and the abuse of grand juries in the United States, but also we need to learn about what unity and solidarity and sticking together and speaking up mean for all of us. So I want to provide a brief historical context before we get into the other speakers. We could start back probably in the 1700s, but we'll start with the Espionage Act of 1917. Think of World War I. The country's a bit hysterical about Germany, about the Russian Revolution. And so the Espionage Act of 1917 was passed, which ostensibly was aimed at treason during World War I, but was so far-reaching that it included obstructing enlistment and recruiting for the war effort. Eugene Debs was arrested as a peace activist under this act. And if you think it's irrelevant for today, then you could read the op-ed in the Wall Street Journal by Dianne Feinstein, who wanted to prosecute Julian Assange, founder of WikiLeaks, under this Espionage Act. The Sedition Act of 1918, up to 20 years in prison to utter, write, publish any disloyal language against the U.S. government. And the Alien Act, barring foreign-born anarchists from the United States. It seemed that at that time, as today, those who speak a different language are suspect and raises hysterical kinds of feelings in many of the population. Okay, in the Patriot Act, if you think of the Patriot Act today, just as those acts were passed in the light of World War II, we have the Patriot Act passed in light of 9/11. Far-reaching powers to put under surveillance all of us. Well, those acts were actually put operational by A. Mitchell Palmer, the Attorney General, in 1920 as they raided all across the country. 4,000 people were arrested in 23 different states. And it formed the Bureau of Investigation, which had over 200,000 cards on political activists, like many of us in this room. And that whole system was devised and put under the control of a guy named J. Edgar Hoover. I have here this one page from 1921. This is a page of the FBI files of the American Friends Service Committee. We were 4 years old at the time, and we have our first FBI file. Through FOIA, we found out we had thousands of pages up until 1970 on AFSC. Again, a nonviolent pacifist organization by Quakers. So let's jump ahead to COINTELPRO. Many of the people here know COINTELPRO, but a lot of people in the general public have never heard of it. It lasted from 1956 to 1971. It involved surveillance, infiltration, discrediting and disrupting of domestic political organizations. And the historical record shows that it infiltrated and acted against the civil rights movement, blocking electoral legal politics, undermining universities and cultural groups, disrupting political activities, which were disapproved of by the FBI. And it involved provocateurs, arson, bombings, break-ins, undercover agents, infiltrating First Amendment groups and events, and finally murder, as in the case of Fred Hampton and Mark Clark, most notably here in Chicago. I want to just read a few words from the Church report. Frank Church was head of the Senate Investigating Committee that looked into COINTELPRO. See if any of these ring similar, familiar. From the Church report, many of the techniques used would be intolerable in a democratic society, even if all the targets had been involved in violent activity. But COINTELPRO went far beyond that. The Bureau conducted a sophisticated vigilante operation aimed at squarely preventing the exercise of First Amendment rights. Many of the targets were nonviolent. They adopted tactics unworthy of a democracy, reminiscent of a totalitarian regime, expanded beyond their initial scope, and government officials, whose duty it was to enforce the law, have violated or ignored the law and then defended their right to break the law. That was all the Church Committee's words about COINTELPRO. The methods that were used, as I said, infiltration, political, psychological warfare from the outside. There were a number of dirty tricks, fake letters, anonymous phone calls, to try to disrupt groups and try to break trust, harassment through the legal system, which was the grand jury system, and extra legal force and violence, including assaults, beatings, and assassinations, in order to disrupt the movement. So there is precedent for the FBI and the US government to go after legitimate First Amendment activities to disrupt and discredit them, and to create a situation of distrust among all of people like us. All kinds of groups have been under this kind of disruption. And in Chicago, the Chicago Red Squad, we had a particular form of this. such subversive groups as the United Methodist Church, the League of Women Voters, the PTA, and the American Friends Service Committee, and we had a bug underneath our conference table during that period in the late 60s and early 70s. The jury, when all of this came to light, the Red Squad, the jury said, the evidence has clearly shown that the security section of the Chicago Police Department assaulted the fundamental freedoms of speech, association, press, and religion, as well as the constitutional right to privacy of hundreds of individuals. And the FBI is obviously still at it, but we also have other groups like the Thomas Merton Center, the Ethical Treatment of Animals, Greenpeace, the Catholic Worker, and other Quaker groups that have been spied on by the FBI from 2001 to 2007. And farther back, the American Indian Movement, the Puerto Rican Independence Movement, CISPAS, Solidarity with People of El Salvador, all were targets of the FBI. Finally, just let me say a brief history about, the expert is sitting next to me, so, and this is from some of his writings. The grand jury system was actually started in 17th century England. It was originally designed maybe to protect the individual rights of people, but has been used for the last three centuries to undermine those rights. And in the US, the grand jury system has undermined the rights of abolitionists, Reconstruction and black suffragists, trade unionists organizing for the eight-hour day, strikers, and anti-war activists. During the McCarthy era, the investigative grand jury came into existence, and it became a rubber stamp for prosecution approvals. In 1950, Congress passed the Internal Security Act, which in essence included an emergency detention provision, granting the legal authority for mass roundups of dissidents and their indefinite detention. And in 1954, Congress passed a special immunity act, which applied only to matters of internal security and gave what was called transactional immunity. In other words, you couldn't invoke your Fifth Amendment rights of silence before the grand juries, which is particularly relevant for all of us here today. So that's a brief history. I want to introduce Michael Deutsch. He has worked for 40 years to support and defend civil rights in the People's Law Office here in Chicago. I'm imagining that if someone wrote a novel a la To Kill a Mockingbird and it was made into a movie, the Michael Deutsch figure would be like Atticus Finch. For he is, I hope, a name. When we hear the word civil liberties, I hope Michael Deutsch is one of the first names you think of after hearing civil liberties. So, Michael.